Good evening. I bet you're wondering what's gone on over the last 2.5 minutes of dead silence. Well, it's called computeritis. Good evening. My name is Tracy. I'll be your host this evening. Bill, I hope you've been waiting for me patiently.
I have been a very patient person.
Unfortunately, my computer was not so patient. It decided the updates were necessary right now.
Yeah. Don't you just love technology?
I hate technology.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm going to rewind here just a little bit because there's something I wanted to start off with tonight.
Okay.
And I'm going to get back onto it. So everyone, bear with me just a second as I start this. Please stand by. That's the opening to Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve and Other Stories. The angel has been sent on a mission to find what an angel can hold, but you cannot have in your hand. So the angel has been sent to find something that only the angel could carry. What could an angel find, and it's kind of insinuated in the beginning of this piece, that you can't hold in your hand. He brings back a song, which is rather interesting. I've been listening to this CD quite a bit over the last week or 3 months, because I actually like it quite a bit. And I started thinking about the idea that there are other things that we hold that you don't have in your hand.
Yes.
Now, the story is actually quite good that goes on throughout the CD. And I was thinking about the idea of principles we hold that you can't hold in your hand, but that you hold in yourself. Rights, more often than not, it's the exercise them, but it's something that we have inherent in us. Love, we can hold love in our hearts, we can't hold it in our hands, although we may hold in our hands the object of our love.
Yes.
And I want to introduce to the listening audience a certain person who is very nervous about actually being here tonight. And I'm not going to penalize this person by forcing this person to be on the show for more than about 30 seconds. But I spent most of today responding to the fact that our daughter turned 14 today.
Oh, my gosh. Happy birthday, CJ.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, CJ Kazel, my daughter, our daughter, who enjoyed her 14th birthday today. And in our family, the rule is, on your birthday, you get to do whatever you want, and everyone else has to abide. So on today's birthday, CJ got to sleep in late, like she always does. But we went off to product placement, Panera Bread, where she got to enjoy her souffle, which she likes very much, and an Asiago cheese bagel. And then she went ice skating with her friend from school for a while. And then we did a very special dinner treat where CJ gets to eat all the crab legs she wants.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we were actually running just a few minutes late coming back from that. My computer did happen to decide that it wanted to do updates, but if it hadn't have done that, I would have been on time. In any case, CJ's here because I asked her, she wanted to know what tonight's show was going to be about, and I asked her to come up with something, and then I told her that it was a good response, so she had to bring it up tonight on tonight's show. Tonight's show is about a Christmas wish. And I asked CJ, what would she like for a Christmas wish? CJ?
I wanted for all my family members to be blessed, including my friends, and so everybody I know could be blessed.
Now, isn't that a pretty good Christmas wish?
That's a great Still? Christmas wish. I'm sorry, I was waiting for you to go on. That's an absolutely superb birthday and Christmas wish. I was reading today about charitable giving because Tracy had sent this email saying, okay, here's what we're going to talk about. And I thought, okay, well, let me just do a little digging around here and seeing what I can come up with. And one of the most astounding things that I came up with is, and not really meaning necessarily to turn this into some kind of a secularist argument, but that conservatives, as a group, give more in charity than liberals do. And I thought that was astounding to begin with. And it's not, you know, some fraction of a percent. It's like 30% more. And I thought to myself, well, okay, that's interesting. I wonder what that means. And decided that, well, it means that conservatives tend to take things like that on a much more personal level. And I think CJ's Christmas wish, and because it's her birthday wish, is absolutely indicative of that. Not for herself, but for others to be blessed. And I think that's an outstanding wish.
I thought it was a pretty darn good choice, too. It is. I am not surprised, and it as far as what information you found, and part of it goes to something that Butch suggested to us in previous conversations and in posts and in general conversations that I've had with him about this idea that if we don't take care of our neighbor, that government will end up taking care of our neighbor.
Yes.
And that's not something that we're interested in having happen. It's not a positive response to need. People might think that, well, if somebody's homeless and government, you know, responds to them, that that's a positive thing. I would argue, and I think most people that deal with the homeless would argue, that government getting involved in dealing with their problems is the worst possible outcome.
And I absolutely agree with that. And in fact, I have a story that illustrates that just a little bit. For those people who know me, they have heard me say before that my entire family, with the exception of myself, is liberal. And my brother worked for a while in the oil industry and was actually very successful. And he went to a lot of conferences in large cities. And he related a story one time where he said, I was walking from the hotel that I was staying at to the conference center and apparently had to go through an area of the town that had homeless people in it. And he said, you know, I almost tripped over one. And then he related how he thought that was such a terrible thing and society had to do something about it. And I asked him, well, what was this person's name? And he said, well, I don't know. I didn't stop. And I said to myself, not to him, but I said to myself, and therein lies the difference. Because if you were truly compassionate, what you would have done was said, do you need some help? And then you would proceed, if you had an ability to do that, on your own, without any government interference, without somebody telling you that you had to do that, but simply because you were a compassionate person and there was someone obviously in need. And I thought that that illustrated that fairly well.
It is a process of how you look at the world around you and how you look at the people that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think anybody in the world that knows me believes that I am the most compassionate person they know. I tend to be really hard-hearted. Not because I am not willing to help. Not because I'm not capable of helping in a psychological or emotional point of view. But because I'm always concerned about, am I helping somebody at the wrong time and in the wrong way? And that should not be a reason not to do it. And I try to balance things out when I see situations. But there is an argument, and we have been having it politically for the last several months, that when someone or something is in trouble, the first response, a desire to help, is not always the best response. Sometimes, you know, trouble has to find a home for a reason. I'm not a believer that people should suffer needlessly. But some people put themselves in a position where they need to understand that their actions have consequences.
Yes.
And those actions need to be allowed, those consequences need to run a certain course. And I don't know where I step into that train of thought. Now, let me speak as I spoke as a Christian. There is a time and a place to step into a person's need that God gives you guidance about. That when you're called to do something, even if you're not necessarily aware that that's what you should be doing, that is a response from God telling you, step in, now is the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Many people act upon those feelings, those guidance, in a very positive way. but I try to tell people all the time, a calling is a blessing. If a calling is a burden, it probably isn't. CJ's desire that we all have blessings reminds me that callings are to be welcomed, to be enjoyed, to be something that gives you joy in doing it. No matter how hard or dirty or terrible the effort might be, if you're being called to do it, it's going to be a blessing. And that's what I kind of wish that we as conservatives pay attention to. That we pay attention to the idea that we are called to do certain things. And if we are doing them appropriately, it'll be a blessing, no matter how much hard work is involved. But if we are not called, then no amount of effort, no amount of desire is going to make it any less of a burden. This is important because I think politically there are times and places to work for political solutions, and there are times and places to work for personal solutions. And that is my goal this year, going forward into the new year, is to try and to determine what is that calling, where is the burdens and blessing for a political party. What are we supposed to be doing? What is the blessing, the calling that we are being hearkened to? Now, if this seems to be like a big stretch to try and make it all touchy-feely, all Christian-y, Christmassy,
yeah.
I want you to understand that, yes, it is. Because it's important that we focus both our personal lives in general and this political party on doing the right thing at the right time. For many of us, we simply abandoned the Republican Party because it had already abandoned us.
Yes.
It already left that conservative calling and decided that what it wanted to do was win. Forget about principles. Forget about rights. Just win. But we, as a group, have to pay attention to the fact that there are other people that agree with us in a majority of ways that we should not dismiss simply because we disagree in a minority of ways. Okay. I sent out some Christmas cards in the last couple of days, and one of those Christmas cards went to our dear friend Sam Gallo.
All right.
Who has set up a Conservative Party of the United States out of his site in Louisiana. And I want to reach out to him and to other conservatives that don't necessarily agree with us on all points and say, you know, there is a time and a place we need to work together. We should find out what those times and places are and do so. We're going to disagree at times, and that's okay. That's what we should probably be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a balance to that. And that is what I am going to see with the help of a lot of other people. Bill.
Yes.
The executive committee of the party. Members of the party. And members of other organizations and groups that have a conservative point of view. To determine what is the right focus, right? What is the right point of view?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to be just an opposition party. I just don't want to be just the other party.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to take those principles, those rights, those things that we hold dear, and actually be able to put them out in our hands and say, here, this is what I want to do. This is what we want to do. This is how we're going to reach out to other organizations and groups.
Great.
That's my taking of CJ's blessing and carrying it through, not just in my personal life, but in our professional life, our political life, because I feel this is an important part of my life at this point, as I believe other people do. This is important. This is something we need to do. This is something that needs to be dealt with. Let's do it in a way that suggests it's a calling, not a burden.
Yep. I'm good with all of that.
So, today it's snowing again.
Where's that global warming when you need it?
And I was thinking that, in fact, if it weren't for global warming, we'd be freezing.
Very good.
So now I'm a big global warming fan, and I think global warming is good because it was 5 degrees below zero here on Sunday morning.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's not Christmas yet. As a matter of fact, we are well on our way to doing some serious record-breaking, both on the snow and the temperature point of view. We have a caller. I'd like to invite the caller to say who you are and what's up.
Well, that must be me.
That be you.
Yeah, must be me. My name is Copper.
Good evening, Copper. How are you?
I'm good.
And I have to interject here. Copper is a friend of mine from Conservative Talk, and I just want to welcome you to the show, Copper.
Well, thank you. I've been trying to get you on the computer, and I cannot hear it, but I've got you on the phone. So.
That's just right, then.
Okay. Well, Bill told me that tonight was very special and that we were going to call in and tell what our conservative Christmas wish was. I thought about that all day, and I do have a conservative Christmas wish.
Fire away.
Okay. I would wish that all Americans, citizens, would take more personal responsibility for themselves. And the reason I say that is because having lived through Hurricane Katrina, and I must say I live in Mississippi, so I know about Katrina. I saw two sides of Katrina aftermath. And Katrina actually hit the Gulf Coast of Mississippi head on. It did not hit New Orleans. But when you say Katrina, most people think of New Orleans. Actually, New Orleans got a lot of rain, and the levees broke, and so they got a lot of flooding. But the hurricane itself hit and totally eliminated, wiped out the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. So what I saw afterwards was that the people in my neighbor, Louisiana, sat there and are still sitting there waiting for the government to come and rebuild their houses for them and take care of them because they blamed the government for Katrina for those levees breaking. The people in Mississippi, when they got back to what was nothing, where their homes had been for generations, they began to rebuild and used their entire life savings to do so. And consequently, Mississippi is back on track. We still have a lot of people that are still rebuilding, but Louisiana, people are still sitting there waiting for the government to come in and help them. So that's my Christmas wish, that more people would be like Mississippians and take personal responsibility for themselves instead of waiting for the government to come in and do everything for them.
We were talking about the idea this evening about how if you give government the power to fix your problems, then government will determine what problems it's going to fix. And that
mm-hmm.
doesn't necessarily mean that what government thinks are your problems are the same problems you think they are. I am so dismayed by the, you know, Copper, I don't know where you live exactly in Mississippi. Where do you live in Mississippi?
In the Jackson area.
Okay.
It's in the middle of the state, right in the middle of the state.
I spent a wonderful winter, November through April, in beautiful Biloxi, Mississippi.
Which is gone.
Which is gone. When I saw some of the pictures after Katrina hit, I was stationed at Keesler Air Force Base,
between
the back bay and the front.
Right.
And I remember leaving the base and heading for the Gulf and going through this very nice, quiet residential neighborhood for about a quarter of a mile before you hit Interstate 10 and got out to the beach area. And I remember seeing pictures of Luxie, and it's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's not even like there's houses that are damaged.
It's gone. Now, the lighthouse is still standing. The lighthouse is still there, only really because of the large casino that was built right behind it and a few small churches behind that casino were protected, the Beau Rivage Casino. But all those big, beautiful homes all that dotted all along the coast from Bay St. Louis all the way to Mobile are gone. They're just gone. And the problem is most of those people were older, and they did not want to rebuild. They didn't have the strength to do it. So they sold their property. And you're going to see a lot of condos. It's going to look like Destin, Panama City, just a continuation of the beach. But so the charm of the Gulf Coast is gone. But the Mississippians really got their elbows in it. And, you know, nobody had flood insurance. Nobody did. And so they didn't get a penny, including the Honorable Trent Lott, who lost his wife's family home in Pascagoula. It was gone. There was nothing but a slab of concrete left. And nobody had flood insurance. But they used their life savings, the ones that did decide to rebuild, and did it. The people in New Orleans in the Lower Ninth Ward are still sitting there waiting for the government to come and rebuild their houses for them.
And isn't that a telling difference?
Yes.
I mean,
yes, it is.
It's just... In one hand, you have to admire the fortitude and the pluck of those people who said, "Well, okay, we lost it, so now it's time to go to work and do what we can to get whatever we can back." And then you look at the other people who say, "Oh gosh, I've lost it. Somebody else, come help me."
That's right. I will say this. Faith initiative-based organizations have been the lifeblood of helping people recoup from Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
There, to this day, there are constantly volunteer villages filled with people from all over the country, kids that have given up their spring break, that have come down to work, high schoolers, church groups. It's amazing the amount of volunteer effort.
It's been 3 years since Katrina now?
Yes.
And they still haven't gotten things rebuilt?
Oh, no. It's hard to imagine how much, you know, I live in Jackson, and it took us 3 weeks just to get our backyard cleaned up. Mm. It was a huge, huge hurricane. Going back to Camille, which hit in 1969, was nothing compared to what Katrina did. I mean, Camille, you know, you can remember boats up on the Gulf Coast, up what Tracy was talking about, the Back Bay, Keesler Air Force Base. Those, I lived in Keesler Air Force Base. Those homes on Keesler that were on the Back Bay were all gone, even the Back Bay. And so it's incredible. There's nothing left. There was absolutely nothing. We still have people that have just now been kicked out of their FEMA trailers. Yeah. Well, they had to kick them out because they were getting poisoned by the FEMA trailers. The government's still supporting them. The government is still supporting them, but they're in hotels and such now.
Yeah.
Well, this all brings back to the general idea, you know, my hard-heartedness, you know, where do you step into the New Orleans area? Do you step into these people that are with the FEMA? You know, where do you step into the point and say, you have to do something on your own? You have to show that there is a desire that
you
want to recover. I'm willing to help people when I've seen them get up off their butts
and
start doing something.
Well, Tracy, the example was, if you recall watching it on television, those people standing on the bridge in New Orleans with nothing to eat and nothing to drink. All they had to do was walk across the bridge, but they were waiting for the buses to come and take them. You know, it's just initiative instead of waiting for the government to come and take care of you. It's just doing it yourself, and that's the thing. That's my wish, is that more people would realize, and I'm not saying all of everybody, but the big difference in New Orleans and in Mississippi, that was the big difference. We have pretty much recovered financially. They have not. And their citizens are gone, they're scattered, and they will never come back. It's not only just an amount of people that are gone, it's a culture that's gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whole culture.
I'm dismayed by the fact that I know that over the next 4 years, somebody is going to recognize the issue and try to come in. I hope that in Louisiana, Governor Jindal says, you know, we'll help you, but you're going to start the process yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if only they had had Governor Jindal during Katrina. We had Trent Lott was still in office at the time. And Trent Lott set up an emergency office on the Gulf Coast that helped every friend I have down there. I mean, all they had to do was walk into that trailer, and they got the help. You know, he was on it. He helped. Our governor, Haley Barbour, helped. We had tremendous support from our state. Louisiana had none. They had a terrible mess going on over there. And, you know... But again, that was my wish, and I'll just leave it at that, is that more people would take personal responsibility for the outcome of their lives instead of leaving it all to the government.
That would be a very good thing.
Copper, thank you very much for your Christmas wish and for joining us here tonight.
Well, thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, and Merry Christmas to both of you.
And Merry Christmas to you, Copper.
Merry Christmas to you, Bill, and thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Night.
Good night. You know, it is amazing what conservatives will ask for when the time comes for wishes.
Yep.
And I think it's something that I was trying to get a handle on this past weekend when I wrote the post on the website, A Christmas Wish for Conservatives.
Yep.
About the idea of what, as conservatives, we might be looking for. And that's why I said, am I doing the same thing that Copper is suggesting the people in Louisiana for? Am I sitting back and waiting for somebody? I think this is what conservatives are doing right now, and I think it's a bad idea. We are sitting back and waiting for a leader. We are waiting for a conservative voice to step up and begin to lead the conservative movement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people looking to people like Sarah Palin or Bobby Jindal or Michael Steele or any number of, you know, Congress critters that they're hoping will jumpstart the Republican Party on a conservative basis. I think we're waiting for a leader. And I think it's really important that we stop that.
I agree. And the reason that I agree is because when people start taking action about a perceived problem on a personal basis, the leaders will rise to the top. That's just a natural state of affairs. It has happened in every organization I have ever worked for or belonged to. It has happened here in my community, and I am sure that it happens in communities all over this nation, that when people step up on a personal basis and say, you know, there's a problem, and I'm going to do something about that, and they just start working at it, people will follow them.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of along the lines of the one of CJ's instructors when she was in karate used to say, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a process of when they were learning weapons, when they were in weapons training.
Mm-hmm.
And they were working through very complicated steps using their weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And people that were new to the process would look at these 90 or 100 or 120, you know, position routines that would take 5 or 6 minutes to run through. And they would just kind of go, how am I going to remember all of these moves?
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor was, fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, do the parts you know and just kind of get a feel to the part next part you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe as a movement, conservative movement, we need to fake it till we make it. We need to assume we have leadership and then just do the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always a little leery of that because it requires an instructor, doesn't it?
Well, if you talk about the example that you used with CJ, sure. If you talk about our communities, if you talk about your neighbor's home burned down, what do you do about that? I think the problem is different. I think if you're in CJ's position, you fake it till you make it, because the body has memory, and as you master one, your body will learn that, and it will remember that, and then you can go on to the next one. But we don't have a lot of experience with our neighbors' houses burning down. That's not an everyday or an every week occurrence. And that is when that charitable instinct, that sense of community instinct, that, well, I don't know that I've got another example, kicks in, and you say, well, I'm too late to help put the fire out, but I can help them clean up, and I can put notices up on the bulletin board and say, you know, folks, we have a neighbor that has had a disaster. Does anybody have some extra bedding? Does anybody have some kitchen utensils that they aren't using anymore? Does anybody have some clothes that they were ready to either discard or send off to Salvation Army or whatever? If you do, here's a place that can use them right now. And for me, that's the epitome. That's the culmination of that whole instinct to help. But it's local. It isn't FEMA coming in and say, oh, you've got two frying pans. Okay, I'm taking one of them. I'm going to go over here and give it to this person. That's me saying, you know, I never use both of those frying pans at the same time. I think I'm going to give this one to my neighbor over there. And that's the difference in the scope and in the degree. I was done with that, Tracy.
I don't know. It is a... I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. There is a balance. There are things that we can do that aren't faking it, that are making it, that are doing it, that we know what needs to be done. It's simply a matter of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes on, those leaders will pop up. They may be already here. They may already be doing things. They just don't understand that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're active participants of it.
Sure.
I'm going to jump off here a little bit. Somebody
okay.
that couldn't be with us tonight sent me his Christmas wish, and I'm going to kind of truncate a little bit. It's a fairly long email, and it's an important story. He's actually published this elsewhere, and I want to share with people because it rings home a little bit for me. He lost both of his parents in the last couple of years.
Mm.
And both of them were rather sudden. Now, my father has had numerous heart attacks. We've been expecting my father to die for the last 20 years, frankly. My father is going to live longer than we all expect, and when he dies, it'll be surprising to all of us.
Yep.
I have said those things that I want to say to my father, and I continue to do so whenever we're together. And we were together over Thanksgiving, and I got some time to spend with them. But it was important because, as I talked about in a previous show, my mom had a heart attack the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Oh, boy.
Now, it wasn't a major, big, hunkin' thing.
Mm-hmm.
She did have to put a stent in there. There was no big open-heart surgery. But it was a reminder that my mother is 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And while she's in really relatively good health, you know, 75 is catching on some pretty good year numbers.
Mm-hmm.
His Christmas wish was he never got to say goodbye to his parents. He had expected to see them again. And he was certain there was more time. And his ultimate Christmas gift would be to have 5 more minutes with his parents. His present is that we take every day with those who we love and to never forget. To kiss them, to tell you that you love them, and more importantly, to hug them. Hold them close. Hold them tight. Hang on for just one more minute. Now, Dr. Joseph Leonardi is a friend that I have I'd like to consider him a friend. We've been talking on the internet for a while. It is what this season's about, this reflectiveness that I have gotten into in what needs to be done. It's one of the reasons why I wanted CJ to be part of this show today. It's her birthday is important, not just to her. She's 14. She's going to have lots more.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many more. Wonderful birthdays, but it's important for us today to celebrate that time with her and to give her that time because she's important in our lives. We each have people that are important in our lives. And this is the right time to be thinking about that. Next week, we're going to talk about politics and the future of what we need to be doing actually work-wise, reflecting on the past and going forward. But I think we as individuals probably do so when even without prompting from, some little mush mouth on a blog talk radio telling us that we should be doing it. We should pay attention to what's important. And what's important is not the American Conservative Party.
Nope.
Or the conservative movement.
Nope.
What's important is the reason for this season. My position is pretty well known on a lot of things, but I think Christmas... No, I'm not choking on trying to say the words.
No, you choked me up with your last story there, so it's okay.
Christmas is a time to consider what Christ stood for, what his life meant, and what its purpose was. I firmly believe that this is a time when we should be paying a great deal of attention to what he stood for, what he means, and what his presence is all about, and what is important based on that paying attention to. The time we spent today with CJ, the time at dinner with friends and her, the time she spent with her friend today ice skating, that's the important part. And I want to say to all of you that are listening, Merry, Merry Christmas.
And I will second that. A very Merry Christmas to all of those folks who are listening. My hope is that you realize those hopes and dreams that you have, and never forget that, yes, it is called Christmas. It is a holiday, but that isn't the name that it goes by. And there's a reason that we celebrate it. And that life that was held out as an example is the reason that we celebrate this particular holiday of Christmas. And there are not many better examples that you can point to and say, if I could choose exactly how to live my life and do the things that Christ did, it's an example that you can't really go far wrong with.
We have about 7 minutes left.
Great.
A little bit of time. I'm going to play... I wonder if I can get away with playing a 3-minute song.
Sure. Well, I don't know technically, but I'm willing to listen.
I think I'm going to try it.
Okay.
We're going to listen to the end of Trans-Siberian Orchestra's story, and then we'll have about 2 minutes at the end, and then we will finish up.
Great.
Let's see if we can listen to this.
Okay. I can see why you like their music, Tracy.
It's outstanding, and the story is great.
Yep.
It is one of the wonderful things about Christmas. My mother listens to Christmas music starting in September. Victoria starts listening to music starting in October. And I really get crazy with TSO starting December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not unusual for me to play that CD 14 or 15 times in a row.
Oh, boy.
It is enjoyable. When I was in the military, I had the opportunity to come home, and I knew I was going to come home for Christmas, and so I called my parents and said, I'll be home on Christmas Eve.
Oh, boy.
And then I called my sister, and I told our parents that I would be home on Christmas Eve, but I'm going to be able to come home 2 days earlier. can you pick me up at the airport? She thought it was great. She thought it was a wonderful idea. She said yes. Then I called my brother and said, I told our sister that I was coming home 2 days early. Can you pick me up? Because I'm going to be actually 2 days earlier than that. And he said, great. And he thought it was wonderful. And then I called my former best friend and said, I'm coming home 2 days early. I've told everyone I'm coming home early. Would you pick me up at the airport? And she said, yes. And then I showed up 2 days earlier than that.
What a great Christmas surprise.
It was a great Christmas surprise. It was one of two Christmas surprises that I did while I was in the military. And everyone was mad at me for having tricked them all. And I said, come on, pay attention. If I'm willing to trick one, why not trick them all?
Yeah.
The second time, I came home without telling anybody that I was coming home. I didn't know. And my parents went to midnight mass at Christmas, and they came home to find me home. Here is hoping that now that my nephew Chris is here in the States for Christmas this year, here is hoping that next year, at this time, the vast majority of our military surprisingly comes home successful, job well done, and they can spend Christmas with their families because I honor them with their service tonight.
Amen.
Bill, thank you for a wonderful Christmas season.
And thank you.
I'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. We done?
We are done. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy.
All right.